why it's taking... Oh, there it went. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to episode 98 of the Weekly Wind Down. I am Jackie D, the literary lesbian.
I'm Stacey, the new age old school mom.
I'm Stacey, the political princess.
And I'm Erin, the geeky gal pal.
Gal pal.
Stacey, Stace, I think that was your most like on point introduction to date. Like it was just enough like, hi, I'm happy to be here, with not enough like, hi!
It's always so forced because you guys tell me I sound depressed. So I'm like, hi, I'm excited to be here.
No, I think that one, hey, it only took us 98 episodes and you nailed it. You nailed it. All right. Tonight I am drinking in honor of the book that Gene and I are working on, which I will shamelessly keep plugging until it comes out. Virginia Dare, American Pinot Noir, and it's from the Russian River Valley of Sonoma County, California. And it's pretty good. That doesn't have anything written on it for me to read to you guys in any type of like fun voice. But it does say excellence assured. And it's I don't know about assured, but it's pretty good. It's pretty good. It says vinted and bottled by American pioneer wine growers. I don't know what that means. Like, they have some pioneers somewhere that is it the ancestors of pioneers? Like, what's happening?
Maybe it's like the village, like M. Night Shyamalan's The Village, where it's like some random small population of people that have not been like acquainted to like normal modern day.
But they're making wine?
Yep.
All right. We're going with that story.
I am drinking Old Vine Red from Marietta Cellars, and it says lot number 68 like three times. So I think that's important. But I just picked it up at Costco, and it's so far it's pretty good. It tastes like kind of a basic red blend.
We're all out some basic bitches stuff at Pinia.
Yeah.
Man, it's about to get even more basic.
It always does when we get to you.
I know. I'm not feeling well, so I tried to get like something that'd be a little bit more mild on my throat. So I am drinking the California Roots Rosé, which is super funny because on the bottle, and I'm pretty sure I've had it on here before, it says like vinted in the Golden State. They're trying to sound fancy. This is $5 wine from Target. I will say, I'm not mad at the $5 Target wine.
I'd be mad at it tomorrow.
Yeah, it's good because it's a little tiny bit sweet, but not like super overpowering or anything. So I thought it'd be very soothing. It's like, you know, like a hot toddy. It's like mother's milk to
you. Maybe you should have had brandy.
I don't have that. Do I look like I own brandy? Like, the only brandy I own is songs from the singer. I got the boy.
Ooh, ooh.
Deep cut.
Oh my gosh. I am drinking Band of Roses Rosé, which I love this rosé. It's one of my favorites. And I'm not drinking vodka this time. Sorry, everyone. That's
because St. Pete kicked your ass. Up and down the street.
She started by reviewing that vodka by saying that it didn't give her a hangover.
They're lying. Be real. No, it fucked me up 7 ways from Sunday, man. It was the worst hangover I think I've ever had. So what do you got to do? I don't know if it's really, it may be because the sheer amount of it I drink. We don't know. We're not going to go back and rehash it. But this wine that I've chosen is actually by Charles Smith Wines. They actually have a really good Riesling, too, that I like called Kung Fu Girl. So it's light. It's cool. It's out of Washington State.
Blech. So
I got it at Target. It was $10, not $5.
Don't Target. Oh, well, excuse me, fancy pants.
Well, you were really drinking $10
Target wine.
Well, hey,
I thought I needed to be fancy tonight. Like, hey,
listen, every other state, our $5 California $5 wine is $10 here.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah,
yeah.
That blows my mind. It was like that Apothic set that I found at Costco here, and it was like 3 bottles of Apothic for like maybe $20, and I was like, oh, I love California.
No, it would have been like 55 here. Yeah. Even though it's crazy. It's ridiculous. Like the $5 wine here is no lie, Boone's Farm.
Ugh.
Yeah. So like, unless you want to do like strawberry fields forever, it's not. It's not
really. I think our $2 wine from Walmart.
Sing the strawberry wine song when you drink it. Sometimes.
Strawberry wine. 17.
Oh my God.
The hot July moon.
You're welcome.
Thank God we're starting it off good.
Well, we're easing people in because we're about to talk about the I'm not gonna say the dumpster fire because it's worse than that now.
Buckle up.
Tonight we are going to discuss the abortion bills that have been kind of sweeping through the country, most notably the Alabama bill and the Georgia bill. But there's a lot of other bills that are on the docket that people haven't been paying much attention to, either because they're still in committee or they were kicked down. But just want to remind people, just because they were kicked down this one time, it just means that they happen to have enough Democrats in the legislature to keep them from being passed, because all of these bills passed on a completely partisan basis, all voted for by Republicans. Almost 93% were all voted for by white men. There were 6 Republican women that voted to pass it. But so before we get into how we feel about them, let's kind of talk about what's actually in these bills and what makes them so detrimental. So to start with the Alabama one, up until this bill passed, Alabama had kind of the standard abortion law, which is standard in a lot of states, that abortions could be performed up until 20 weeks. The 20 weeks part is standard, but what wasn't standard was only if the woman's health was at risk, or in cases of incest and rape. They've pretty much completely abolished it now. They've taken away the clause for incest and rape. Now they don't care if a man forced himself on you, or if your uncle forced himself on you, you have to have that baby. You can only abort the baby if the mother's life is in like imminent danger. And that has to be proven. Like the doctor has to submit documentation. They have 180 days after the abortion was performed to submit documentation as to proving why that woman's health was at risk and why the doctor decided to go ahead and perform that abortion. If a doctor performs an abortion without being able to prove that the mother's life was in imminent danger, it's a Class A felony, which is punishable for 10 to 99 years in prison.
Which is longer than you would get for committing a rape.
Right, which yeah. The argument to that was the man on NPR was saying today, well, when you rape someone, you haven't killed them. So the punishment should be shorter. That's just kind of the mindset we're dealing with, just to give people a taste of what it is. If you get a doctor to an attempted abortion, it's punishable for up to 10 years in prison. It's a Class C felony. So these are, this is essentially outlawed abortion in Alabama. But what does this mean? Like, so make no mistake, rich white women are always going to be able to get abortions. Like mm-hmm. that is always going to be a thing that happens. Mm-hmm. This is going to disproportionately affect people, poorer people and minorities. And I think that's the point.
Yeah, 100%. I shared a thing on Facebook today, and it was from The Daily Show. And this is Lindy West had been talking, was on there a while ago. This wasn't even that recent. And she was talking about anti-choice rhetoric. And she said that anti-choice people are not trying to stop abortion. They're trying to legislate who can and can't have abortions, because conservative politicians, their wives and mistresses and daughters will always be able to get an abortion somewhere. All anti-choice rhetoric does is keep people trapped in poverty for generations. That's the goal, and if it wasn't the goal, they would spend their time and money on comprehensive sex education, free birth control, and free contraception.
Well, I think that, and this has been stated in, I originally read it in the New York Times, but it's been stated now on several different news sources. The point of this bill was actually to go way above and beyond what is necessary, because they're trying, they expect it, they want it kicked back in court because they want it to go all the way to the Supreme Court, because they want to challenge Roe versus Wade, because they do have finally a conservative Supreme Court for the first time in decades. So this is their chance to stab at it. I did also read, though, that they may have actually overplayed their hand on this one, and this may actually not be what it takes to overthrow Roe, because it's really, really difficult to find people, even pro-life people, or anti-choice, I should call them, because I don't like pro-life, anti-choice people, that won't make exceptions for rape or incest. Like, that's barbaric. Mm-hmm. You're talking about like 11-year-old girls can't, anybody who has been forcibly has had sex forced upon them and then it results in a birth should be able to make that choice. Like, wherever you stand on abortion issues, personally, I would like to think that if your best friend or your daughter or your sister or your mom or whatever, if that happened to them, no matter where you stood on them, you would want them to be able to make that choice to terminate the pregnancy.
Right. They didn't have the choice when they got raped or when they
wasn't about spreading their legs.
Then now you're taking away their choice to actually fix something that happened to them. That was awful. This absolutely awful. I literally cannot put myself in that mindset, because it sickens me. It just absolutely sickens me that people are okay with that. They're okay with it. They are literally okay with it because they think that this is a child of God now. Like, no offense, but God did not plan for that.
There's a Twitter like post going around, and I don't know if this guy's famous or not. His name is Matt Welsh, and he posted today, if a 12-year-old is raped by her father and the father takes her to get an abortion, the evidence of the crime will be destroyed and he will go on molesting his victim for years. If, however, that child is born, his crime will be discovered and she will be rescued from the abuse. This is from somebody that is like for the bill. And so I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Right. That's disgusting. It's, I don't know, disgusting. If this guy's famous or just some random person, but his thing has gone viral because it's such a stupid statement.
So, but let's play that out for a second. Okay. In 6 months, this bill is going to go into effect. I mean, yeah, it's going to be held up in the courts and whatever, but this bill is essentially going to go into effect. So let's play out that scenario. Okay. So your 12-year-old is forced to have your child. Now you have a child born that probably suffers from, whether or not they're physical impairments, but most likely mental impairments. You're also dealing then with a mother who's raising this baby who has clear psychological impairments, because now they're being forced to raise their sister or brother and still under the same roof as their dad. Like, so now you're bringing an innocent person, that baby, in this situation, because now he is a baby. Now he is in this world and he is living and he is breathing and now he exists. So now you've brought this human being into this existence with so much volatility and so much hatred and so much resentment and so much abuse, psychological, physical, mental. What for? What for? Yeah. What? Like,
this,
what?
Dad is going to go to jail because, according to this post, that's the proof now that there was incest and rape happening. So now the dad's going to go to jail. Now, where does this 12-year-old and her brand new baby go? Mm-hmm. Who's going to take care of that?
Right down into poverty.
Right.
And that baby's probably going to go into the foster system, mm-hmm. and then so on and so forth. And the baby is going to end up being hopefully not treated horribly, but who the heck knows in this day and age? I mean, if there are people that are willing to vote for a law like this, then there are people that are willing to be mean to a baby that could or could not have some physical or mental impairments.
This country forgets it wasn't all that long ago, and I'm talking like the 1920s, that adoptions were not popular because there was a stigma attached to them, which related to only loose women gave their babies up for adoption. Like, these women had them out of wedlock. They're poor, they're dumb. So nobody adopted babies. So they went, before the foster care system was established, they went to these places called baby farms. And they were essentially middle-aged women who the state would pay them. And as soon as they got the money, There are certain instances documented where 100% of the children that were given to these women were killed and disposed of, because then the women could take more on and get more money. So this, we're talking about the 1920s, like not 1745. Like this wasn't, we have grandparents that were born during that time. So to think that you can just simply place the burden then on society to take care of these children who are going to have impairments, even if they're not physical, they're going to have mental impairments, PTSD, attachment disorders. Like my wife deals with them pretty consistently, kids who were kind of neglected as children who grow up with these reactive detachment disorders, who they weren't cared for, they weren't loved, and they grow up being pretty much violent. Imagine not being held or cared for or talked to as a small baby. You don't understand how to communicate with people. You don't understand how emotions work. Like you have, those things are learned. So it's the same thing that happens with orphanages in Russia. That's why there was such a push to start adopting babies from Russia, because they put them in these centers and they just leave them. That's why they stop crying, because they've learned no one comes for them. That's the kind of system that you're setting up here by forcing victims of rape to bear these children and then put them into the system. And that's just for cases of rape and incest. We haven't even gotten into the psychological damage it will do to women who are forced to give birth to dead fetuses. It's just, I can't find, I was reading through the pros for this, and I was trying to have an open mind, because Aaron's partner had mentioned, you know, are you going to talk to anyone who's on the other side? And we're like, we don't know anybody that's on the other side that's willing to come on here and talk to us about this. Like, so I was trying to kind of go through, and I went on the Heritage Foundation's website, and I was trying to look through, and it just kept talking about the sanctity of life, the sanctity of life. But they're isolating that to the second someone is born, as opposed to what happens after, or I'm sorry, the second that person is conceived or that fetus is conceived, what happens after they're in the world though? And not just that, there are too many medical things that can happen, happenstances that can force a woman to be in severe pain, danger. The babies can form without bladders. They can form without brains. They can form without hearts. They can form without all these things. There's a million things that could go wrong. And you're trying to legislate it, saying, we don't care. That baby can die in you, and you can give birth to it, and then you can bury it. What the fuck are you talking? Why would you do that to anyone?
Our insurance companies won't help you with the fucking PTSD you're going to have from that, and the postpartum depression, and anything else that may come from having to birth a dead baby. Like, let's be real. This is a vicious fucking circle, and it's disgusting. And I'm sad that this is where we're going. This is where we're headed.
And part of it too, it's just like, it's so disgusting, because even if you take all of your thoughts and feelings and stuff out of it, the governor of Alabama tweeted about signing that bill and literally used the word God. Like, this is, we're doing this because, you know, even in the case of rape and incest, like a little baby is just a precious life given to us from God. Go fuck yourself. Like, your religion doesn't get to be involved in how we create law. That's literally how the country was founded. And it's disgusting. She said, every life is a sacred gift from God. Take your God out of this, because it doesn't belong here. It just doesn't. And one of the things, like, I had a friend that posted something which I totally loved, which she said, a fetus is a group of cells and a woman is a full-fledged fucking human being. So how about we start taking that into consideration? There were a couple things that, let me just say, some of these posts like really spoke to me, and they were posted by a 17-year-old girl. So I have a lot of kids that I know from different things that I follow on social media, and the amount of kids that are just like so on the right side of this just gives me hope. But she shared a post from Occupy Democrats. Here's some quotes from Republicans on rape. Rape is kind of like the weather. If it's inevitable, relax and enjoy it. If it's a legitimate rape, the female body has ways to shut that thing down. Rape victims should make the best out of a bad situation. Even when life begins in that horrible situation of rape, That is something that God intended to happen. In the emergency room, they have what's called a rape kit where a woman can just get cleaned out. And then if a woman has a right to an abortion, why shouldn't a man be free to use his superior strength to force himself on a woman? At least the rapist's pursuit of sexual freedom doesn't, in most cases, result in anyone's death. So those are all real quotes from people. But the post that spoke to me the most said, you don't have to love abortion. You can dislike it. Maybe it even makes you sad. The way you view abortion is up to you. If you don't like abortion, you can advocate for proper sex education, access to birth control, and other things that have been shown to lower unplanned pregnancies. You don't have to like abortion, but what you can't do is disrespect somebody for having an abortion. You can't take that away from their choice for women because you don't like it. Your emotions are not someone else's responsibility. Your emotions aren't more important than anyone else's bodily autonomy. You don't have to like abortion, but you have to respect other people's rights, and that includes rights to safe, accessible abortion.
Like, that's that right there.
You don't have to like it at all. Your religion can be great. It can be the thing that dictates how you behave as a human being, and I think that's a great thing if that's what you do. Your specific religion does not get to dictate the other people that don't abide by it. It just doesn't. It doesn't have any sort of factor in my life at all, and it sure as hell doesn't have any place in the law.
Yeah, and I like that where you say the safe part about it, too. I mean, like, we all know that abortions are still going to happen, and they're probably going to happen not safely. You know, they're going to happen.
Getting rid of abortions. They're getting rid of safe, legal abortions. Yeah,
exactly.
And that's not okay.
Yeah. I mean, like, look at you ban drugs. People still sell and do drugs. You know, I mean, like, we've all seen Dirty Dancing. Don't you remember the part with Penny?
Right.
I mean, come on. Right. With a rusty table, and a sparing or a paring knife or whatever the hell he said. I just, it's going to happen. People, it's going to happen.
I think that thing about a fetus being a group of cells, like, that spoke to me so much because it just goes to show in this world, like how sort of anti-women we are, because that group of cells doesn't have a gender yet. It's not anything. It is literally, it's just a little collection of cells. And at that point, there's not a huge differentiation between anything, but the fact that we regard that so much more highly than we do an entire woman's life, with no regard to how much a pregnancy, whether it's planned, unplanned, whatever the situation is that's leading to that person to make that decision, how that's going to affect their life, I think is disgusting.
We actually had kind of an interesting experience when we got pregnant with Lincoln because we, you know, obviously I didn't knock Lex up. So we actually got to go in, and normally when a traditional couple gets pregnant, you know, they don't even find out till like week eight, you know, and they can't see a doctor usually till, you know, 10 or 12 weeks. And that's when they get their first ultrasound. But because of the way we did it, we actually got to go in and have ultrasounds, after the second week, they were checking to make sure that the egg implanted and, you know, kind of the progression of the fetus. And so when they talk about, you know, this is a person, I can unequivocally say it is not. Like, Lincoln, who is a person now, was a tiny, tiny, just ball. There was nothing to him. There was no movement. There was no motion. There was no heartbeat. There was no nothing. They can sometimes detect what they call a heartbeat at 6 weeks, but even our doctors told us it's not actually a heartbeat. It's just kind of how the fetus is changing, and it's the cavity where the heart will be, because you can see something flickering, but it's not actually hit. It wasn't his heart yet. And it wasn't until we got to week eight that we could actually, he looked like a tiny, tiny, like peanut, like an actual peanut. I mean, I sent you guys the pictures of it. We didn't have hands. He didn't have legs. He didn't have a head. It was literally a peanut in there. And that was at, you know, 8 weeks. And then we moved on to our OB, our normal OB. But so for me, who actually witnessed that whole progression, and for a person, I mean, we intentionally got pregnant. Like, it was, we paid a lot of money to get pregnant. But even if something had happened at that point, he wasn't Lincoln yet. There was no resemblance to what he was, you know, at week 20 or 24 or 25, when we could actually see his fingers and like his head and his nose. He was literally a peanut. Mm-hmm. So to say that these fetuses are actual human beings at that point, they're not, because Lex, the first time, had a miscarriage at at 6 weeks, she miscarried. And I was nervous when she was miscarrying because I was like, oh my gosh, we're actually going to see something like, and, you know, as it's happening, I was really worried about what that was going to do to her mentally and like how she was going to kind of deal with that. Nothing. There was nothing. Nothing came out in like a tiny, insy weensy like body. Nothing like that happened. I mean, it was horrific. There was a lot of blood. It was, you know, it's nothing I wish on anyone. But there was no confirmation as to this was a person in there that we lost. I mean, it's still hurtful and it's emotional and like all these things because it's, you lose the possibility. But that wasn't a person. Not yet. Right. It just wasn't. It totally changed. Not my mind, because I've always been pro-choice, but the kind of the way they discuss how fetuses develop and everything, because we don't have a ton of pictures, obviously, because they're in, you know, uteruses inside human beings, but there was nothing there. There was nothing there to prove that this was a human body.
Right.
Is what I'm saying.
And I think it's pretty obvious, like, the medical community is not supporting this. This is not something, like, if this was something where, you know, the medical community was saying like, hey, this is a thing we're doing and it's absolutely not okay and we're torn on it and we don't know what's happening. Where are all the doctors standing up and saying like, you absolutely can't be performing abortions, that, you know, it violates the Hippocratic Oath and you're murdering somebody? I'll wait. Where's that? Where are the doctors?
You can find a few. Don't.
But you know what I mean? Like, where is the overwhelming response from the medical community saying we support this and it's not okay? It's nowhere. Aside from a few crackpots, it's not like, you know, all of the medical community getting together at once to say like, hey, guess what? Smoking's bad for you. Like, oh, okay. Well, they came to a consensus on a medical basis that that's the case. Not one. I don't see the medical community. I don't see associations of doctors coming forward to saying,
American Pediatric Association. Yeah.
Right. Where are they coming forward to say it's not okay to perform abortion? They're not, because it's not medically necessary. It's a bunch of crackpots getting together saying this violates our fairy tale, you know, book that we read that tells us how to behave, and it's not okay.
What do you think, Stace?
Although I just totally pulled in my brother and referred to the Bible as a fairy tale.
But, I mean.
I agree with everybody's opinions here and what you guys are saying. I just always want to point out, like, we've talked about abortion before, and I know I've said it on here before. It's important to talk about rape, incest, and people that have medical problems where their baby's going to come out deceased, or the mom's health too, you know, where like, okay, it's a choice between the baby's life or the mom's life. Those are very important to talk about when talking about abortion, but also just the fact that, you know, when people say, oh, if you don't want to have an abortion, just close your legs. You know, like those people, sex is part of a person. It's part of being in a healthy relationship. It's part of being human. It's going to happen. And being smart and safe with sex, like, is not 100%. You can have like a totally happy, healthy relationship and do all of the things right and use condoms and use IUDs and use whatever it is that you choose to use. And those things can fail. And you should still be able to have the choice if you want to have a baby with that person. You know, maybe you know that like this relationship's not going somewhere, but you guys are having fun having sex. It happens, you know?
You're allowed to do that.
There's friends with benefits.
Right. There's whatever
the case may be. Yeah. It's just some people date, you know, multiple people and they have sex with those people. And that doesn't mean that they're ready to have a baby with those people, but that doesn't mean, oh, keep your legs closed. You know what I mean? That's part of being a human. Sex is part of being a human, and it's part of healthy relationships. So I think that it's important for that to be thrown out there too, because even if you do everything right, those things do fail. Like, yeah, even if you get your tubes tied, that can grow back. That can fail. So, 100%.
And like one of the, like, I know we talked about this several weeks ago when I talked about that episode of Grey's Anatomy where the lady had been raped. And she brought up a point in that episode that I can't help but think about now. How do you prove that that's what happened? So even if you're just talking about like people that say, like, well, only in the case of incest and rape. Great. How do you prove that?
Well, you can prove incest.
No, but with rape, like, how do you prove something was non-consensual? Do we have an illustrious past of being able to, like, convict rapists? No. So even if you just limit it, that's why I think you can't limit these things. It just doesn't make any sense. Yeah, because you can't, like, you can go out.
Incest and you know, medical reasoning. It's also just part of family planning and teenagers being dumb and, you know, birth control failing.
Right. I have a friend who had an abortion and she was casually dating a guy. They were using protection. It didn't work. She didn't know she was pregnant until she was probably like 9 or 10 weeks. She didn't know she was pregnant. So she was still drinking. She was still doing all kinds of stuff. She was terrified that something would be wrong with the baby. She wasn't she hadn't graduated from school yet, from college. She wasn't not going to have a future with this guy. She didn't like that. Having that baby would have changed the course of her life forever. And she probably wouldn't have the 3 kids that she has now with her husband. And so it was a horrific decision for her to make. She 100%, in my opinion, made the right decision. The guy didn't even pick her up. I had to leave work to go pick her up from the
club. Stand up, dude.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of those things where you're like, yep, this was the right decision for you. And you deserve to make that decision. And does it make her a slut? Absolutely not. There's nothing wrong with her casually dating somebody and having sex.
First of all, there's no such thing as a slut.
Right. Where's everybody telling the guys like, oh, you want it? Your girl wants to have an abortion. Why don't you keep it in your pants? I've literally heard that never.
Yeah, right?
Oh, I'm going to tell my kid to keep it in his pants, but... I'm not going to do that, but...
Whatever, but do whatever you want. Do what feels good, but...
Don't do dumb things.
Don't do dumb things, of course, but at the same time, I'm just saying that, like, if we're talking about, in the conversation where we're talking about abortion, you only hear keep your legs closed. You never hear, why doesn't he keep it in his pants? Because you know what? It takes two to tango.
Can I say one thing?
Sure.
So that Lindy West interview that you were speaking of, like one of the things that I think was so poignant about that particular episode is I think that once you like, because it was all about that book that she's put out called Shout Your Abortion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she said to her, one of her really good friends had an abortion, posted the entire experience on social media. She shared it on Lindy West, took it, shared it on her Twitter, hashtagged it Shout Your Abortion, and that just like the outpouring of like people talking to her about and telling their abortion stories. And I think that that's very, very interesting and so needed in this day and age to kind of take the stigma away from it, that it's not, it's like sometimes it is what the person actually wants. They want an abortion. They need to not have a baby at this particular time in their life. And I'll be really honest with you, if I were to get pregnant right now, I would more than likely get an abortion because one, I cannot financially afford a baby. And I think that it is horribly wrong to bring a child into this world when you can't afford it. I willingly bring it into the world and you can't afford it. You're immediately, you know, on food stamps, you're on WIC, you're on all these things because you can't afford your baby. That's my personal opinion. My mother brought me up that way and I've held on to that. I'm not saying everybody has to be that way, but one of the things, though, that it's like, I know that if I had to get one, I would get one. And I know I said something one time about, you know, I would jokingly, if I found out I was pregnant, I'd throw myself down the stairs. And not because I don't like children, but because I don't think I'm fit to be a mother. And there are so many women out there that are not fit to be moms. And they shouldn't be bringing children into this world. But the book, if I can get to it, is shining light on something that no one wants to talk about. No one wants to hear your story of why you had an abortion. And I think it is awesome to put a face with someone's story that tells you why, where, how their experience was. It could be horrifically traumatic, but the whole point is stop hiding it. You know, we have, but now Alabamians have to hide it because they're not going to be allowed to.
Well, it's actually not just Alabama. I actually,
Mississippi.
I wanted to talk about this because Alabama and Georgia are getting a lot of heat right now, but I know we have listeners in this other states because we can see where you're listening to us. And everyone needs to start calling their congressman because Arkansas They put Act 180 into effect, and it's called the Create the Arkansas Human Life Protection Act. And it's the legislation implores the Supreme Court to reconsider Roe versus Wade. And it says it likens abortion access rights to that of racial segregation laws, which is super racist one, but they're calling it a crime against humanity occurs when the government withdraws legal protections from a class of human beings, resulting in a severe deprivation of their rights. And so they're talking about fetuses at that point. Kentucky, they also just passed one in this year, and it makes performing an abortion a felony, punishable for up to 5 years in prison for the health provider. It does not make exceptions in cases of rape or incest, but does make an exception if the woman's life is in danger. It does not make exceptions if the fetus is incompatible with life. Louisiana, they actually passed this in 2006. And theirs is called the Human Life Protection Act. And all these things are the same. Mississippi passed one. South Dakota, North Dakota, which Dakotas, I know we got a few of you. Georgia, which we're going to talk about in a second because of the dumb comments about moving if an egg implants in the fallopian tube. We'll just remove it and put it in the uterus. And no biggie. That's science. So Tennessee.
Did come up with that one?
So Tennessee passed one. And it gives, again, it gives the exception to if the woman's life is in danger, and specifically notes that mental health concerns would not qualify for these exceptions, which we need to remember when we talk about mental health, we're also talking about if something were to happen as far as incest goes, like that takes that off the table. Rape, that takes that off the table. Like all of these kind of extreme circumstances, it makes criminal abortion as a Class C felony. We're talking about, that means if you have an abortion in that state, good luck getting a job. Like, good luck coaching if you do have other children, because a lot of actual abortions come from already married women who have husbands and other children. You're not going to be able to coach your kids' teams. You're not going to be able to do any of that stuff. Oklahoma just passed one. This bill makes exceptions for the women.
Wasn't Georgia the one?
Well, yeah, Georgia's on here too.
No, I'm saying, wasn't Georgia the one too where you could, like, even if you were to cross state lines,
they can prosecute you. Yeah, we're going to talk about Georgia in a second. But Oklahoma at least says they will make exceptions if the woman's health is at risk or if the fetus has died, or in the events of the criminal assault on the mother. So they make exceptions for rape, incest, or they will. I mean, I hate even saying, hey, at least they'll let you abort if your child has died in utero. But hey, at least they have, because some of these others are really heartless. South Carolina just passed one with the same bullshit. Missouri, Indiana, Texas. Texas actually went to the point, though, that the punishment for abortion is actually punishable by death. And here's actually a shocking one. I'm not being facetious. Washington State, which is traditionally considered a blue state, they have a trigger law in effect where they will, as soon as Roe versus Wade goes into effect, they have very, very restrictive abortion laws in place. And them too, if the law passes, both the doctor and the mother could face murder charges for abortion. And of course, Alabama. So there's a lot. Alabama and Georgia are getting a lot of press coverage right now. But if you live in any of those states, you need to call your representatives, call your legislators. Like, you got to start talking to the people who represent you, because there's going to be a shit ton of women out there that aren't going to have access to reproductive health care. And this is a stage of, like, The Handmaid's Tale that is horrific. Like, the fact that they are, the fact that these people, here's what cracks me up. The same people that are so anti-choice are so like, no, you have to have this baby. We don't care if it's dead inside you. Otherwise, we're going to prosecute you as a murderer. Are the same people that still want 18-year-olds to be able to buy assault rifles. Because you should be safe in utero, but you shouldn't be safe at elementary school. It's that just was one of, the Venn diagram of these dum-dums.
Oh, I know. Like I said, I saw so many of these like great posts on Instagram, and I was just so happy at how many of them were like young, awesome people, especially ones that were brought up in super religious households. So it made me happy. One of them was a Venn diagram, and it said when should the government be involved in a person's pregnancy decisions? And then it was never, also never, and then the middle section was never ever. And I was like, yeah, all of those. But one of the other ones that really spoke to me was this one that said, how did abortion get banned faster than assault rifles? Asking for all the victims of mass shootings.
Oh, right.
I did want to add to that list. I did want to say which ones are still in committee, which means they haven't been approved yet or disapproved. So they really need to be called. South Carolina is still pending review. Missouri is still pending review. Indiana is still pending review. Texas, where they can actually kill the woman or the doctor, put them to death for performing an abortion, is still in review. Washington State is still in review. So if you live in any of those states, you need to get on the phone. You need to call every day and keep making your voice heard, especially the ones that are saying they're going to put to death women. Or is this really where we've gotten? Like, right. Is this it?
Well, and then it's a really slippery slope. One of the articles I was reading was in that point they were talking about investigating women who've had miscarriages to make sure that
Georgia
they weren't abortions. And, like, are you fucking kidding
so in Georgia? So this is where the dum-dum was saying, hey, if you have an ectopic pregnancy, we'll have the doctors go and remove it, stick it in your uterus, and we're just boop boop done.
Move on.
Like, cool. That's not how science works. That's not, look, no. If you don't understand the basic anatomy of a female body, you shouldn't be allowed to weigh in on what happens to it.
Well, if that was possible, they would have.
These men making all these calls about women's bodies, they don't fucking get it.
And if it was possible, it would have already been fucking happening. Like, come on. Right. Like,
that's like when you see all these ads for all the, like, I know so many people that sell, like, it works. I'm like, oh, does it work? Because wouldn't doctors be prescribing your fucking Saran wrap shit to people who need to lose weight for health reasons? You don't think a doctor would have thought that one up? Good job, Copernicus. I hate people so much. And I don't know if it's because I'm sick and I have like zero patience for any of this, but it drives me.
But everyone buying into that is right now Googling Copernicus. So
hashtag science.
So Georgia, they passed kind of the famous heartbeat bill. I shouldn't say famous, infamous. It's also, I'm not going to get into the nitty gritty of it because I think it's been all over the internet, but Georgia also has the highest maternal mortality rate in the country. Mm-hmm. Black women in Georgia die in childbirth at a rate 3 times out of the national average. Race, poverty, and geography intersect down in Georgia. Minority pregnant women are usually poor and it's difficult for them to get prenatal care, which is 60 miles away. Both Alabama and Georgia have infant mortality rates that are among the highest in the United States. It's also important to mention that Alabama has the lowest education rate in the country. So Georgia heartbeat bill, 6 weeks. You have to know you're pregnant within 6 weeks to get an abortion, where most women don't even know until.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What about the other dum-dum that said that you know the minute it happens? Like, the minute you conceive, you know. Did you hear that? Like, I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
These are both really old, but I have two recommendations for people to watch. One of them is like the Last Week Tonight episode on abortion, because it's one of the most comprehensive pieces on abortion I think probably I've ever seen in my lifetime. It's got to be like a year or two old now, but John Oliver really goes in on abortion laws and even states where it's legal, the ridiculous restrictions they put on buildings where they can't be near schools and how wide the hallways have to be and all of these things that make it impossible. And sure, it might be legal, but there might only be 2 clinics in all of the state of Georgia, for example. And so to even try and travel there and get like, it's crazy. And there's so much information in that episode. I'd highly recommend it. And only because you brought up infant mortality rates, if you haven't seen the movie The Business of Being Born, mm-hmm. I highly recommend that to absolutely everybody. It's, oh gosh, who narrates it? It's
I don't remember. It's been Ricky a long Lake, time. I think.
It's super interesting, but they talk about the commodity of childbirth in this country and the fact that United States has such a high infant mortality rate, but we also don't. We don't do anything in a natural way. We have the highest rate of C-sections because it's easy for doctors and They get paid more because it's considered a surgery and childbirth isn't. Even if you look at the way we position women when they're giving birth is not the way you would naturally give birth. Like if you were just out in the wild in caveman days, you're just going to squat on the ground and have your baby because that's what puts all your muscles into the positions that it needs to sort of opening everything up. It gets gravity working. Same reason why you see why squatty potty is great for taking a shit, because your body's not meant to have you sit upright on a toilet. It's meant to just squat down on the ground and take a shit. But what we do is we put women in the position that's most effective for the doctor as opposed to what's most effective for women. So those are just two really interesting things that I would recommend people watch. But also the funniest thing I've seen all day was a meme, and it was a picture of Daenerys, and it said, okay, Daenerys, Alabama next.
I love that one. Yes. That's so funny. Yeah. Also, I think everyone should watch
on all those fucking guys that sign that right.
Pox on your houses.
Everybody should watch the Samantha Bee, the sex ed for senators, because in like 10 minutes, not even 5 minutes, she basically schools everyone on everything.
She's a fucking national treasure.
I love her.
She was already at the top of my list of people I love, and then the whole feckless cunt thing happened, and I was like, the fact that she used the word feckless made me love her even more. And her show is perfection, and if you're not watching it, shame on you.
This is also why we need more women in office, though. Yes. Like, more women need to run. We need to elect more women.
Also, can we just call out fucking Kay Ivey as a feckless cut also? Because how are you doing this to the women in your state? Like, you're a fucking disgrace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it is a nod. It's a nod to privilege, too, right? Because because Ivey has... I was reading this Twitter thread the other day, a raging feminist who's actually running for office in Georgia, and Godspeed to you, ma'am, Godspeed. But she was talking about how, you know, when people say, well, just go out of state to do it, move out of the state, just get out of here, then like, why do you even stay there? And it's because a lot of people don't come from a place where they have the means, the funds, the
capability.
Well, you'd have to find a job. You're removing kids from school. Yeah. Like you have family ties there, and you shouldn't have to leave a place you love because they're now treating you like second class citizens. And she was talking about how
you have to get a medical procedure.
She was saying how it speaks to such a place of privilege because, like Ivy, if her daughter, or granddaughter, or whatever was in a situation where, God forbid, and I don't wish this on her, as horrible as a woman as I think she is, were to be raped, she could fly her to New York, she could fly her to California, she could fly her to any of these liberal states that just as quickly as these super perversive bills are being passed, they're opening their gates wider to allow more access to reproductive health care for women. She would have the means to be able to locate to one of those states and have a procedure like this done. That is not the case for 80% of the population of people. And having free and safe access to this kind of reproductive care shouldn't be isolated to the most rich and most privileged among us. It just shouldn't be. That's morally wrong.
Yeah. One of the articles that we were reading, you know, there was a girl that said that her boyfriend and her drove to Pensacola, Florida from Georgia so she could have an abortion. And the only way they could afford to pay for it was because of his financial aid money from school.
Mm-hmm.
Like, first of all, I mean, you're not allowed to use your financial aid money for that kind
Shame
of
on you.
Using it for, like,
but what else are you supposed to do?
But yeah, exactly. Like, that's how they made this choice together. Like as a unit, like, you know, it's like, are we going to get to the point where maybe it'll be allowed if the man says it's allowed? Like, you know,
we're
totally going towards the handmaid's tale. Like at this point in time, Stacey, when you were talking about, you know, kids are going to have sex, people are going to have sex. That's just the way it is. Eventually sex is going to be illegal. You know what? Like we're
you
just
need
not going to be allowed to fuck anymore. And you need a permit.
You should have a permit to have fucking kids in the first place because I've seen some terrible fucking parents. But when we talk about, and I know this might sound callous, but like, what's the first thing, like, we talk, like, you don't want your fucking neighborhood overrun with feral cats. So what do? We spay and neuter them. Spay and neuter your cats. Spay and neuter your cats. Nobody's like, well, listen, cat, you're a fucking slut, so why don't you just deal with the repercussions of the choices you made and let that ruin your life? You thought you were going to get off the streets and into someone's nice little house while touch it. No. Now you got a whole little gaggle of feral kittens to worry about. The tomcat's off doing his own thing. Like, nobody thinks that. Not one single person. And so why is it okay for us to do what we need to do to regulate sort of reproductive things at such an early stage? I just don't get it.
Here's another crazy thing that happened. So Pennsylvania, they just passed a bill that makes it illegal now to abort a child that you have found out has Down syndrome. Now, it's a double-edged sword, because while I understand that Down syndrome is not a recipe for death and they're wonderful human beings, and I have, this isn't about kids with Down syndrome at all, because I get it. They have a million wonderful capabilities to add to society. And I'm not saying that just because your baby has something along these lines that they should be automatically terminated. But what bothered me about the bill was it's not taking into account the care and financial responsibility that is required to raising a child with Down syndrome. Now, if they had passed this bill and said, and we're also going to dump $1 billion into, you know, daycare when I say daycare, I mean actual like facilities that can help, that can care for kids with these special needs, or one of the parents could stay home and take care of them. We're going to subsidize you this amount of money so that you can actually care for these children, because they do need extra care. They do. Yeah.
And a lot of times into adulthood.
Absolutely. And so I'm not saying that they should, that I understand the case behind it, because you get into this whole eugenic termination thing. And like, so I understand that, but you can't say you can't do this and then tell a family that already has three kids and is on WIC and food stamps that, well, now you're on your own and we're not going to provide you any services. And the services that are available are limited. And sometimes there's a 6-year waiting list to get on them. So what is that family supposed to do in the meantime? So they're trying to solve a problem, but they're not giving any solutions to real life situations that would cause this family to have to make this decision in the first place.
Not even just for that, but for any situation, even a, you know, a child that's perfectly healthy. So what, you can get, you know, 3 weeks of unpaid maternity leave and then back to work?
Yeah. Like, we don't even take puppies from their moms at 3 weeks. It's crazy. You can't adopt a puppy
until they're 8 weeks old, and you can go back to work with your fucking placenta still coming out. You don't
give a shit. That's not how it works, so don't.
Like, no, but you know what I mean?
I'm going to take that as gospel.
Nobody cares, and it's so frustrating. And it just, I don't know. I just,
but it goes back to the whole, if you're truly anti-abortion, you should be putting funding into programs and situations that would ease the burden of having to have a
and
child.
And into comprehensive sex education programs.
Yeah.
Because guess what? I don't know. We're in 2019. Has abstinence only education really limited the number of teen pregnancies there in Alabama?
Listen, I'm gay. I've known I was gay since I was like 7 years old, and I still had sex with guys in high school. So it definitely doesn't work.
I don't know. 20 shows that are based on teen pregnancy. So tell me how that abstinence only education is going.
Not great. Technically,
I've actually never had sex with a guy. So, I mean,
well, you're cooler than me.
I guess that's really nice, you know, gold star, whatever. But like the idea of better
slip that,
you know, geeky gal pal. So seriously though, like I think better sex ed would be amazing. Like there was actually a video floating around Facebook. I don't know if you guys saw
real sex ed too.
Yeah, like, but the lady was like, she actually had vulvas, like vaginas, and on her shirt. Do you guys remember this video? I'll find it. We'll post it on the Facebook page. But it was so awesome. Like, it was like, obviously some kid was filming this woman talking about sex and the vagina and what is involved in the vagina and like all the different areas and what's and she's holding up like a puppet vagina. Like, it is amazing. It is so awesome. And it's just the idea behind, like, those kids learned more than I ever fucking learned until I was a lesbian and was staring right at one. Like, I literally was like, I had my own and I didn't even know about it. Like, you do research faster, so you figure it out. But like, I'll tell you what, they learned more than I ever learned, and it was amazing. It was amazing. But
because it's taught, you're taught from a super young age that your vagina is a bad thing. It's like a weapon of mass destruction. And then everybody reads.
They can
the color
be purple. Sure.
Yeah.
They can ruin lives, man.
That scene in The Color Purple, where she finally like takes the mirror and looks at it and stuff. Like, what? There are certain things in life that are my biggest pet peeves, and they irk me more than anything in the world. And one of them is when
Trump
we use like pet name. What'd you say?
Trump supporters.
Well, yeah, and comic fans, and there's a lot on there. But when we use comic fans is like the Trump of fonts. Like, you just see it and you're like, this person's a fucking idiot who used this.
I'm
like,
only sending emails to you from now on in Comic Sans. No.
Ben keeps threatening to put everything in Comic Sans. I hate it so much. No, but one of my biggest pet peeves is when we use like secret words for vagina and we call it cute little toy words or cute little kitty cat words or cute
like
little
tootie.
Yeah. Yeah, like your fluff and your blah blah blah. Like, call it a fucking vagina. It's not it just bothers me when you infantilize things like that. It's so disgusting to me as a human being for us to it bothers me. No, it's a functioning piece of anatomy. It does things. We shouldn't be like, it's your cute little secret thing we don't ever talk about. Like, no, let's talk about vaginas. They do things.
Hey, I'm here. Let's talk about vaginas. Let's do it.
I'm the wrong group to be proselytizing vagina talk to.
I got some time.
Let's do this.
But you know what I mean? Everybody should know what their vagina looks like. Everybody. I just remember reading The Color Purple and being like, she looked at her vagina with a mirror? Why? Like, oh, maybe I should do that. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a fucking mystery. Everybody should learn how one works, including the people who are making these laws. And again, if you don't have one, you don't get to tell people what to do with it. Is a great thought process to have, but Kay Ivey has one apparently somewhere in that dusty, cavernous receptacle where it's supposed to be. And she still signed this law because every baby, even their, like, you know, incestuous rape babies are little gifts from God. So, you know, whatever. I'm real fired up about this.
I'll tell you what. The color, or not the color purple, but the fried green tomatoes when they're in the...
Yeah.
She's like, we're going to let everybody take your pants. She's like, I just have a problem with my girdle. Like, no one wants to fucking look at their vagina.
No. Look at it.
Freaking figure it out, man. God, I just don't understand.
It's overwhelming. Here's the thing. It seems as though, I don't know, I don't have kids, so maybe other people in this group can speak for me, but it seems like such an overwhelming responsibility and change and dedication to bring a child into this world that it's not something that should be forced on someone.
Agreed.
You know, like, I just don't think that that's the thing. Also, I've never had an abortion. I know several people that have and have been around during that process. I don't know a single person that was just like, all right, well, do you want to go to Taco Bell? Like, none of them were totally cool afterwards. It was even in the situation where they didn't want the baby and they knew it was the wrong decision, that was the most difficult thing they've ever done in their lifetime. And it caused a significant amount of trauma in their life, but way less trauma than they would have experienced if they would have had to go through with it.
The last thing I want to say before we're going to move on to Obsessed With this week is, guys, and I know, I think we have like 4 guys that listen to this podcast.
Tell me more.
But it's also important for, especially in this circumstance, in this set of the dumpster fire, for men to speak out who are pro-choice and who do believe in women's rights to choose and women's body autonomy, for them to speak out and say so. Men, because of the patriarchal system that we live in, and whether you like it or not, we do. I mean, we have since the beginning of time. I'm not blaming the men who live now for it. It's not your fault. You were born into it. You didn't cause it, but hey, we're here together. So when you see atrocities like this happening and you see people telling, you know, women that you care about and women that you've never met, but you mm-hmm. at least have empathy for what they should and shouldn't be doing with their bodies, and those decisions being punishable by death, by fucking, they can be put in an electric chair, or in some states, I think Texas still uses the electric chair, put to death or sit the rest of their lives on death row because of this decision, because they've decided to take body autonomy and decided what they were going to do with it. You guys have to speak out with women, because we can't do it alone, because the majority of the people making these decisions are men, and they're not going to believe us because they've never listened to us. Never. Well, so it has to come from you guys. They've
never lived it. Here's the thing. There's a certain freedom that comes with being a man in this situation, where if you get a girl pregnant, you can just like, see ya.
You may have to pay child support if they find you, but
if they find you, and there's ways to evade that too. And there's this inherent responsibility that falls on women just because of the physical nature of our reproductive systems. And that's not fair. Imagine if you were in that situation. I mean, we all sent that thing today that was said, you know, if men got pregnant, you could get an abortion at a gas station. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just the truth. And like, we need allies. It's so important to have male allies in this fight, because it's just not fair. Side note, if you have not watched the Last Week Tonight episode on lethal injection, or not lethal injection, on the death penalty, you 100% should, because that is an interesting piece of news that everyone should watch.
What's everyone obsessed with this week?
Aside from this bill.
Stace, you go first. You're still on mute.
Sorry. I was sitting back listening to everybody's like opinions, and I was so intrigued I forgot I was on mute. So I know you guys probably already know what I'm going to talk about, but it took me a long time to figure out if I was going to talk about this on the podcast, because it is very personal. But I figured this is probably like the episode to talk about it, because we're just going to talk about
welcome uteruses. To your diary. What do you want to tell us?
Right?
We're here. But I also, dear diary.
Dear diary, it's also very important because we have, like thousands of female listeners, which I think is fantastic. But I, doing my research and stuff, I've realized that I like reading other women's stories. So I thought I'd share mine on this podcast, because I've been going to doctor's appointments and found out that I knew that I had endometriosis, but also adenomyosis, which is very similar, but my doctor has decided to remove my uterus, which I'm excited about, but also a little bit nervous about. But I wanted to share my story on here with everybody, because I am having a hard time finding stories that are just like mine online. You know, there are some people that have total hysterectomies and they talk about how they deal with the hormones and stuff. And mine is a partial. It's actually called like a supracervical. So I get to keep my ovaries and my cervix, which is awesome.
You have a super cervix.
Super cervix. So I get to keep my cervix, which keeps my organs up where they're supposed to be, which is really great, apparently. But it's a little bit unique. And I think that like this is a really great platform to share my story. So this is going to be happening over the course of the next, you know, couple months. I will be missing from the podcast a lot next month because of it, but I want to just kind of document, you know, how it goes, so that other women, if they're going through this, can listen and see how it goes and see if it's something that they want to do, if that's their, one of their options. And also a very real, I feel like a lot of the stories I read online are, just kind of case by case, you know, like the one story that's actually just like mine, the woman finds out her thyroid is so off. So now all her like side effects were from her thyroid being off. And so now I can't even, you know, go to her for reference for side effects, because okay, now your case is not like mine. So I'm going to document what happens on here. I have my pre-op appointment in like 2 or 3 weeks. And then I have my actual surgery the second week of June. And you guys are going to hear all the gruesome, fun details about all that stuff.
What were your symptoms that led you to, if you don't mind sharing?
Yeah, no. So I've had painful periods all my life. I tried basic birth control. Then I tried the IUD and I got fibroids from it. It was terrible. I tried the NuvaRing. My body rejected it and I got my tubes tied. None of those things changed how bad the cramps were, and my bleeding wasn't so bad. I guess a lot of people that have endometriosis have really heavy bleeding. My bleeding was bad, but not super bad. It was my cramps where I was like down for like days overdosing on Motrin type stuff. Yeah. And it was supposed to get better after my 30s. That didn't happen. It was supposed to get better after having kids. That didn't happen. Somebody even suggested it would get better if I got my tubes tied. That didn't happen. Nothing seemed to change it. And so that's when they finally went in and they did the ultrasounds and all this stuff and said, oh, okay, this is what it is. And endometriosis is when excessive tissue grows on the outside of your uterus. It can attack your ovaries. It can attack your sciatic nerve. It can grow in lots of places. Adenomyosis, which I'm probably mispronouncing because the doctor says it super fast. Adenomyosis is when all the extra tissue grows inside your uterus, and so that causes cramps too. So those are the differences between the two.
And how I was so surprised when you said that it had moved into your sciatic nerve, because I didn't know that that was a thing that could happen, and that sounds so horribly painful.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I think that we've caught it early enough that that's not going to be a problem, because if you only have endometriosis, things that take, might have to have an entire hysterectomy and take your ovaries and cervix too, because of where it spread. Whereas my doctor is saying a lot of mine is staying very intact. And thank goodness, I mean, I hate to say that, but thank goodness my sciatic nerve is what really set us off to figure out, okay, why is this changing, you know?
And how long did it take you to actually get a diagnosis? Like, how long have you been going to the doctor and, you know, presenting these symptoms to them?
I've been going to the doctor for bad cramps. I would say probably after I had my stepdaughter in 2009, well, it's after that they diagnosed me with cysts, ovarian cysts, but then that never went anywhere and they couldn't find them later. And so I think that was just kind of that must be what it was. And then it wasn't until I had fibroids in 2011 that they said, let's see where this goes. And that was kind of where I started tracking it more. And I started paying attention to myself, because this is the first doctor. I have a brand new doctor now, and this is the first doctor that's ever been like, let's really dive in and figure this out and solve this.
Because is that not the best feeling in the world when you're dealing with a medical issue ever, and you finally get a doctor who's like, we're going to figure out what this is? Like,
the doctor I had in 2011 was so bad. That's where my failed tubal ligation, that was that doctor. I had a fibroid almost the size of a golf ball inside my uterus, and he did a DNC, scraped me out, and didn't see it.
Jesus.
And I'm like,
what the fuck?
Yeah, he was garbage. Yeah, so I had really bad doctors for a little while.
You should have gotten one of those kits where they just clean everything out. Like
that's taken me seriously and actually gone over, okay, let's see what your options are. What have you done? Let's do some serious tests and actually figure out a way to. And a lot of the things that they try, if you have endometriosis, are temporary fixes. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, you could try different birth controls and stuff.
Because they're just trying to treat the away. Symptoms, right? Like, they're just trying to treat the symptoms, yeah.
Have you guys ever seen that episode of The Golden Girls? Not that I'm comparing you to a 70-year-old woman, but there's the episode.
Golden Girls is great. We can all compare ourselves to one of them.
Right? Well, Dorothy, she's going to the doctor because she just doesn't feel right. And she goes like 3 or 4 times, and the doctor keeps telling her she's crazy. Like, there's nothing wrong with she's crazy. There's nothing. And she finally finds a doctor that diagnoses her. And I can't remember what it is exactly she's diagnosed with. But when she meets, she like runs into her old doctor in a restaurant, and she totally fucking rips him a new one. Like, I'm not crazy, motherfucker.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
We've all had those moments. I had the same thing where after I had surgery, and apparently this is the diagnosis I got, is that just surgery is so traumatic that sometimes it just throws your whole system into a weird state. Like, it just can throw everything off sometimes. But I couldn't eat food after my second foot surgery. I had duodenitis. I couldn't keep anything down. They, about a year and a half of like elimination diets and the most horrific testing I've ever had done in my lifetime, where I had an esophageal manometry study, which if you've ever had that done, it's where they take a tube that's not like an NG tube. It's about as thick as a pencil, and it's full of these little meters, and they put it through your nose and down into your stomach, which feels like it's piercing your eyeball and into your brain. They numb everything. They shove it down there, and then they make you lay, and you can feel it. You're awake for the whole thing because you have to swallow. And basically they're studying how much, if you have too much force or not enough force when you swallow. Anyway, it was the most horrific thing I've ever had done. The most painful thing, whatever. I had endoscopies, push enteroscopies, nuclear medicine studies, all these things. Finally, I ended up finding a doctor that worked. But I remember going to the ER less than 2 weeks after I had surgery, which is always a big thing after you have any kind of surgery. They're like, if you experience any vomiting, nausea, anything like that, you need to come back immediately. I do that. I go to the emergency room because I was so weak from not eating for over a week and a half. I was so anemic that I didn't have enough blood in my body, because that's one of the things, you lose blood having a orthopedic surgery. And then if you don't have enough iron to make new blood cells and stuff, it just doesn't work. So I remember going to the ER and being like, I had a fall risk bracelet because I was non-weight bearing. I didn't have enough energy to walk. I couldn't stand up. It was really, really bad. And the doctor, when you feel like a doctor's not listening to you, that's the experience I had. He told me I was going through withdrawals from my narcotics. Mind you, I had surgery a week and a half prior to that. I was already off the narcotics because they give you narcotics, and then you take those until the pain is bearable enough that you can just move to an NSAID, which I was already at. Turns out I ended up getting duodenitis from taking the NSAIDs, not even the narcotics, but I knew right off the bat he wasn't listening to me. I had a headache. They gave me Benadryl, which they pushed too fast. It made my heart rate spike. I felt like I was going to die. It was a whole crazy thing. But the feeling I got going back to the ER the next day, because I still couldn't eat anything and I didn't have enough energy to even get up to the bathroom to throw up on crutches. And that doctor just her ordering tests. I was like, thank God. Cause this guy didn't listen to me. He didn't run a single test. He told me I was having withdrawals from something that I stopped taking several days ago, that I only took the amount I was prescribed. And then months and months and months of testing after that to try and figure out why I couldn't keep anything down, to finally get a doctor that was like, okay, all right, well, let's just go in through stuff. Let's do allergy testing. Let's do all of these things. And even though the diagnosis was just like, man, crazy shit happens after you have surgery, that feeling of finally someone is listening to me, because you feel like you're crazy. Mm-hmm. You feel like you're absolutely crazy. And you know what? Trust yourself and be your own advocate, because nobody else is going to do that for you.
No, the government will.
There you go. Yeah. That's true. Fuck them.
Yeah. So that's going to be I'll be here for the rest of this month, and then 1 or 2 weeks into June, and then I'll have a couple weeks off. And then that's going to be what I'm obsessed with, is just going over, fun stuff about what happens. And then I'll check in every once in a while and let people know about my side effects and all that good stuff, which hopefully will all be positive.
You don't even have to drink, because you'll be on painkillers.
Hey.
Can we get you on here when you're still under anesthesia?
Oh my God. Those wisdom teeth videos. No.
I distinctly remember having my wisdom teeth taken out. And I told my mom, I was like, it wasn't even that bad. I was like I was able to walk immediately afterwards. And she said, no, you sat there and said, I don't need a wheelchair, I could walk. And then you didn't move. Like, I thought I just got up and walked.
Sounds like me when I'm stoned.
And she was just you said, I don't need that, I can walk. And then you didn't move for 3.5 minutes. And we put you in a wheelchair and we wheeled you out to the car.
I think it's great that you're sharing that, Stace.
I do too.
I was really back and forth about it, because I was like, wow, that's really personal to talk about. This is my uterus, but after researching so many stories, at first I was back and forth about good stories and bad stories. Cause of course you want to read about bad side effects and be, you don't want to be naive going in. But then after reading, a few and really researching a lot of what can happen and why things happen was a really big one. I decided I'm only going to read positive, stories from here on out. But I also, I just feel like it's important to share real stories. This is not a, a sponsored story in any way. You know what I mean? This is my real story of what happens and why. So,
so many people are so reassured by hearing stuff like that. I know I am. I think
it's great.
Heck yeah. I think it's awesome that you would share something like that. If I ever have any surgeries, I will as well. But I seriously, like, I think it's good. Like, and also I think you probably will get people reaching out to you like XYZ, what happened? And I think that's really great. I'm proud of you.
Not going to have any more periods, which
right? I'm super so excited for you to not.
Yes. Yeah, I know. That's the best part.
Well, and I feel like there's so many benefits to it too. Like,
yeah, like, I won't have periods anymore. I won't be at risk for uterine cancer. Mm-hmm. I can still get cervical or ovarian, but you know, it is what it is. But, that's not a risk anymore. PMS won't be a problem. I won't go into early menopause because I am keeping my ovaries. So I will be producing my own hormones. And so that's awesome. That's good.
Man, so many victims saved from the non-PMS thing, because I can't tell you how many people I took out this month. PMS thing. I have read the Mad Queen.
I have read that some people still have cramps when they ovulate, because you still do ovulate if you keep your ovaries, but
where does it go?
It's absorbed. It goes and it's absorbed.
The human body is amazing.
It really is. But some people say that they do still have cramps, so that's kind of a bummer that around the time of the month that they would. But
probably not been nearly a problem. Bad
as that hasn't been a problem to, right? for me, so I feel like that's not going to be a problem, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm not worried about that.
You're a freaking superhero. So, you really are.
Faux show.
I don't know about all that.
You are.
We deemed you one. Sure. That's it. It's done. We voted.
Yep. You're.
Pick your color. Pick your symbol. Hero. Let us know.
Super cervix.
Super cervix. Yeah.
It's going to be that,
we'll make a picture with two ovaries and a wine glass. Tube. Yeah. Oh,
yes. I love it. The fallopian tube is like flipping people off.
Yeah.
I think you should wear that outfit that Janelle Monáe wears in that video, pink. It's like it literally looks like a vagina, like her pants.
Yeah, here for it.
Yeah. Super cervix to the rescue,
Stacey.
Yeah, you have a super cervix.
You have 2 minutes.
I know you guys are whatever. Game of Thrones. Okay, here's the thing. I'm not gonna talk about a lot of details. I know people were.
I'm timing you.
Upset with it. I've done nothing but watch YouTube videos about it since the last episode. Which I watched, and then I just stared at my TV for about 15 minutes, not being able to react or function or do anything. But here's the thing. I think I'm going to reserve my judgments until this Sunday.
So much faith in humanity.
I'm going to wait. I'm going to reserve my judgment until after the last episode on Sunday, because I think there's ways that maybe they can redeem themselves. And I think I was a little judgy because... You know, when you get mad, you get in a fight, and then you go back and you're like, let me re-examine all my thoughts. That's where I'm at right now. And I'm like, okay, I need to give them until the last, I need to give them until the last episode until I really have all of my judgments in order. But I will say, I feel confident in saying, I think they shortchanged fans on the amount of episodes because the plot is just, they're rushing through the plot too much. And I've heard so many. I've watched a lot of YouTube videos where they're talking about, like, if you've read the books, this was not a surprise, but they've done trying to do it all in 6 minutes, just 6 minutes. Oh my God. In 6 episodes, just wasn't enough, but kudos to the writers who can make, you know, an hour and a half episode feel like it was 15 minutes. Cause I think there's something really special about that. And I think in George R. R. Martin's writing, which I don't know, we haven't seen in a million fucking years cause he hasn't put out a new book in forever. There's something really interesting about the amount of symbolism he uses, and this won't give anything away, but there's a white horse that appears at the end of the last episode, and it's so interesting the different symbols that you can pull from that, biblical ones and sort of just really classic hero's journey stuff that you can pull from that. So I'm obsessed with Game of Thrones. I think as much as I was really unhappy with the way things turned out in the last episode, I think signing a petition to have Game of Thrones remade the right way with competent writers is really fucking demeaning to the people that y'all weren't upset about this show until a week ago, so I don't know why you're upset. Well, like,
I mean, how would you feel, Jax? Jax and Aaron both, if you wrote a book series and it wasn't done yet, you were in the, like, on the last one, you started writing it and it was made into a movie, and
I mean, laughing all the way to the bank. I'm gonna stop you right there. I've been laughing all the way to the bank.
Let me tell you something I'm obsessed with, and I think this just makes George R.R. Martin, like, what an interesting guy, but such a respectable writer, because somebody had asked him, like, are you gonna, because you haven't written these books yet, are you going to change the ending? Because he told Dan and Dave, like, this is how the story's gonna end, so they could base the show on that. And people were asking him, like, in an effort to sell more books, are you gonna change the ending? And he was like, no, like, some of the tertiary characters may have different things happen just because of, you know, things that weren't included in the show that were included in the books or whatever. But why would I take all this time and years I spent writing these books and dropping the, like, foreshadowing and dropping hints and developing these characters just to sell books? Like, I'm not going to betray my writing and my characters to have an ending that's different than the ending on the TV show. That's he's ridiculous.
He's gonna write his own ending that he has been planning for all these years, or he's gonna match it to the show.
He told the writers of the TV show what the endings of the books was gonna be, because those are his characters and that's what he does. But people were asking, like, okay, you told them one thing, are you gonna make it different so people buy the books if they've already seen the show? And he was like, no, because these are the characters, these are the journey, this is the journey that they're on.
He can flesh it out more, though.
He can flesh it out way more, and there's a lot of storylines in the books that haven't been included in the books, and or that are in the books that weren't included in the TV show. And there's a lot of stuff that can happen in the TV show, or that can happen in the books that didn't happen in the TV show, because they rushed it all into 6 episodes for the final season. But he was saying, like, he wouldn't betray any of his characters and do something different than he told them what the ending was going to be.
But I was under the impression
that
he's
had this ending since the beginning.
And that's just it. Like, that is where the show is headed. And, like, people that are so fucking pissed off about it, it's like, have you not been watching the show?
Well, right. Like, they're mad at Dan and Dave, and it doesn't make sense. Like, George R.R. Martin is the one who wrote this. And the more I sit back and think about it, the more it's just such a human tale about, you know what? Some people are fucking pieces of garbage.
And you don't always get a happy ending. Mm-hmm. This isn't a romance novel. You know what I mean?
It really does corrupt people 100%.
Or fucking real, man. Mm-hmm. Just ask the Republicans in Alabama.
Yep.
Aaron, was it my turn? What are you obsessed with?
So, I am obsessed with the movie Wine Country.
Oh, my God.
Love it. First of all, I love anything Saturday Night Live, which I know Stacey and I have, like, totally geeked out about.
Paula Pell.
She's amazing. Emily Spivey freaking rocks my world. Amy Poehler's my girl. Rachel Dratch. I love them. Tina Fey coming in clutch as Sammy. Love it. Absolutely love it. But the one thing that I did not expect was a cameo by Brené Brown, who I am also obsessed with, because I just watched the Netflix thing. I've obviously seen the TED Talk. Like, the vulnerability and courage thing is so, like, I'm so obsessed with it right now. So that is one thing that I have been thinking a lot about and trying to get my head around. And it's that whole idea of, you know, we were brought up to be brave, but we weren't brought up to be vulnerable. But in order to be brave, you need to be vulnerable. So it's that whole thing where, to put yourself out there means you may or may not fail. And if you don't fail, great, but you might fail. So you just need to get past it and, you know, continue to be open and honest with people and tell people things. And I think that after someone goes through traumatic experiences or heartache or, you know, anything really, like even this recent thing with, you know, the abortion news coming out, like anything like this that makes us think as, like, a human being and, like, where our place is in the world, I think a lot of times we immediately want to, like, close up and just, like, curl into fetal position and just be like, I don't want to deal with this. Especially as, like, even though I don't always seem like an introvert, I'm basically introverted. Like, I'm an introverted extrovert. You know, like, I don't mind talking to people, but I would rather not.
I'm not feeling very people-y today. She says,
right. Like, and she says, she's like, you know, I love humanity, but I don't necessarily like people. And that is exactly the case, you know? And I think that she sheds a really great light on just the idea of you put yourself out there in the best version of yourself that you can, and people are going to accept it or not. And if they do, great. And if they don't, oh well, just keep going. Keep going forward, keep moving forward. And so Wine Country and Brené Brown are my two.
I think we should do a whole episode. I know I sent you guys a video a long time ago, an interview with Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda talking about female friendships. And we should really have an episode that's just about that, because they're so important. And that movie, if it, like, man, if it does not show the importance of female friendships, I don't know what does.
Makes you live longer.
Yeah, so we should have a conversation about that. Also, I know I already took up my time, but can I just say, like...
Reclaiming my time! Reclaiming my time!
You said the thing about being an introverted extrovert. Let me just tell you, as someone who's, like, pretty much an extrovert, like, your extrovert friends who are happy all the time and stuff, give them a break. Cut them some slack when they're having a rough day. Like,
oh, it's dear diary, don't work out your personal shit on here.
Not just me, but I had a couple other people say, like, oh, blah, 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 this person was doing that, and they're normally so happy and whatever. Now they have a shitty attitude. Like, guess what? People who are always happy and smiley and extroverted get to have bad days. They get to feel feelings. Let them do that.
Okay. Bridge we'll remember girl. That. No, I do the same way. I'm totally the same. Like, I don't mind being in, like, a group of people that I know. Like, I'm totally the extrovert. I'll talk and laugh and cut up, whatever. But when you put me in a room full of people I don't know, I'm like, well, that wall looks great. I'm going to stand by it.
Well, but it's just hard, that expectation that if you're happy, you're happy all the time. And the second you're not, it's like, well, now it's affecting other people. And well, like, no, like, I get to be upset once in a while. Like, if you're always a 10 on happiness, and the second you're an 8, people are like, wait a minute, why are you unhappy? Like, I can be upset. My fucking uterus is shedding its lining right now. Give me a fucking breath.
Listen. You're
being controlled by the government, motherfucker.
Right. Because you're legislating my uterus, and I have a fucking problem with that.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing to remember. If everyone's entitled to their feelings, like, no matter what they are. People don't have to like them. They don't have to agree with them. They don't have to do fucking anything. But everyone's entitled to them. So let people, when they're sad, amen, be sad. When they're happy, be happy. When they're confused, they're confused. People are entitled to feel however the fuck they want.
Yeah.
What I'm obsessed with this week, I'm going to go on Stacey's, and I'm going to talk about vagina and uteruses.
Yeah.
This is my second round of my period using the Diva Cup, and I wasn't going to talk about it on here, but I think everyone should be using it, because the only regret I have is not starting this, like, 15 fucking years ago.
Tell me all the details right now.
I was super scared to use it because I heard it was real messy, like, whatever, blah, 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 blah. It is not. I don't find it messy. Like, you can be careful. And so what it is, essentially, it's a small, like half an egg shaped cup that you insert into you, and it catches your blood, and you dump it into the toilet and whatever. You don't use tampons, you don't use pads, like, you don't have to use any of that stuff.
It doesn't leak.
I have never had it leak. I also don't, I have a really heavy period, and I have for several years. So it says you can keep it in for up to 12 hours. I empty mine about every 9. So I don't wait the full 12 hours.
Do you feel it more than you do a tampon?
No, I don't feel it at all. I don't feel it at all.
And you don't have that pesky little string.
No.
Oh, fuck that string.
And I find it actually much, because I have such a heavy period, I actually find it much less messy than tampons.
Mm-hmm. So, when you pull it out and it's all, ugh.
Yeah, so I'm just telling everyone, if you had any apprehensions about it, I would go ahead and give it a whirl. One, it's way better for the fucking environment. Like, way, way better. Tampons are partially plastic. They're not just biodegrading into the environment. Two, like, you can completely go to the bathroom and it's not a big deal, and no strings are getting wet, and, like, all these, like, on your light days, you know, when you don't have to necessarily change everything. Like, there's all these little things.
You're trying to shove a dried tampon up your
right.
Yeah.
It's,
well, I think my biggest concern when you told me that I should try it, which I don't have to now, just what I took it out of my Amazon cart. No, was if you're in a public situation, what do you do? Because you have to take it out and wash it in a public
space. Right. So what I, here's what I do personally. I take it out at work and I dump it. I don't wash it in public. I put it back. I wash it once I get home though. Like I take it out and I wash it when I get home and then I put it back in. But I've never, because it's silicone, it's not like, it just, you just empty it. It's not like.
And then it all just goes away.
Yeah, and it all goes away.
Like, that's a big misconception that I've had, is that you need to wash it every time.
It's like, right. It's going to be like drenched in blood. You know? Right. You got to like waddle out to the bathroom, like right. To the sink in a public setting.
I just wanted to clarify that.
Right. I mean, if you have some type of like weird phobia, but I guess to me, I'm like, I don't have a germaphobe thing because it's me. It's not like I'm laying it on the bathroom floor and rolling it around under my shoe.
Right. Like taking it off and handing it.
I'm just taking out, dumping it and putting it back in. Like it's not, I will say though, if you're going to use it though, make sure you read the instructions because it is important that you get like the full suction and like they do this thing, you know, you have a full suction if you can actually like rotate it inside of you in a complete 360 because you have to fold it up and insert it. And then like it makes the suction around. I haven't had any leaks.
Does it buy you dinner first?
I haven't had any leaks.
Is there like a handle?
Yeah, there's a tiny stem that sticks out. Yeah, there's a tiny, tiny stem. But I'm telling guys, I used to have to change my tampon like every 2 hours on my heavy days, wear a pad overnight. Like I had to do all of this stuff because I bled so heavily and I don't have to do any of that with the Diva Cup. So, and it's good for the environment. So I know people don't like talking about this stuff, but I'm telling you, give it a try. Now, I don't have nails. I don't know how that would work, but.
But I also
need them right now. Oh my God, you got them shortened.
Hey, she is coming to our team.
I'm only in now. Welcome to the club. Look at my nails.
If you're at home and you're not doing a lot of like public events where you're out, you know, doing stuff, you can at night when you get home from work or whatever, just take it out in the shower.
Yeah.
You dump it and rinse it, put it back in while you're in the shower, and it's like an all-in-one thing, and that's really cool too.
You could. I haven't.
I hate tampons. I hate them. I mean, I use them and I've been using them since I was like 15.
I'm telling you, do it. I swear to you, my only regret is not doing this a decade sooner. Like it is, it's game changer.
7 days. I'm going to order
it. It's a game changer. I'm telling you. The first.
They're kind of pricey, but they're reusable. So it's not.
Right. You get
cheaper than tampons.
You get one.
You get one?
You only need one.
Oh, well, no.
On Amazon,
well, no, you can like
can you? Is it dishwasher?
I don't know. Ask your congressman.
Oh,
it's silicone, so I'm sure you can put it in the dishwasher. I cannot recommend this enough. It has changed everything. Like I'm not even like my period. I'm like whatever. Like it's a game changer. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I have sex with a tampon too, but like
it's less messy, it's less gross.
It doesn't look like a fucking crime scene afterwards.
But no,
strip girls too. It's advertised as mess-free period sex for straight girls too. And I'm like, how does that work?
No.
To not pop the question, not do the thing.
No, like, you could not insert a penis in there because that's where it goes.
Another short penis. A micro.
No.
A micro penis.
Hey. Not even a micro penis.
I've only read about it.
Use this and have mess-free period sex, let us know. Tell us.
Yeah, because I don't think that's a thing.
It just, like, pushes it in. It's like one of those rubber nipples, you know? Like, remember those things that you could, like, suction onto the table when you were a kid and you push it down and it would, like, pop up? Is that what it is?
I don't know. I haven't tried sticking it to a table yet.
Well, try it. Later on, try it. Hey.
I'm telling you, though, for people, if you have heavy periods and stuff, like this, it's a total fucking game changer. Like, my wife, since she had Lincoln, hasn't had real heavy periods, so she's, like, been apprehensive to try it because it, like, freaks her out. The whole concept kind of grosses her out, but I'm like, I cannot recommend it enough. Do it, especially if you have heavy periods. It changes everything.
Like, once you figure out, like, how to, like, pop it into play. Do you like my suction sound?
Yeah.
That was a good question. When, like, are you surprised at how little blood there is? Because I feel
no,
like
there's so much.
Else, well, I would feel like it would be way less than I think it would be. Because I feel like we're all conditioned that in our minds we think we bleed so much. And it's really not that much.
Well,
it's supposed to be like 3 tablespoons a month. It's not. And I'm like, oh, no. Shit.
So the Diva Cup. So if you're over 30 or have had a child, you're supposed to use size 2. And if you're under 30 or haven't had a child, you're supposed to use size 1.
Ooh, and I'm a size 1.
The Diva, you're not under 30. If you're over 30, you're a size 2. If it holds up to 2 ounces, but the 2 ounces is damn near the top. Like the most I've ever had is on like my heavy day at nighttime. I've had about 1.5 ounces and it still didn't leak. And that was at night while I was sleeping. Like I'm telling you this, this is legit.
I was like, for somebody that has had such fucking terrible periods since I was like 14 years old, I was so all about it after you told me about it and you told me like your reviews. I was so excited. It was in my Amazon cart. I was ready to click buy until I went to my doctor's visit. And I was like, oh. Yeah, well, but also I feel like it is like a game changer that
it is.
It would have been super cool for me.
You're not worried about it. You're not worried about fucking leaking in places, like having to get to the bathroom. Like yeah. I'm just telling you, it's so freeing. It's so freeing. It's totally changed. Like, and this is only my second cycle with it, but it's awesome. Everyone should at least try it.
I feel like one of those, like almost like oil and vinegar, where you like lean it over. And
I thought so too. Stuff. I was so scared the first night I went to bed with like my heavy day. I was like, I'm going to wake up and it's going to be everywhere. Like, yeah, I was like, it's going to be horrific. But because it suctions around the inside of you, there was nothing anywhere. It changes everything.
All of the companies should send us samples and we'll do a review.
Yeah,
and you did the period panties review. I learned like our first 5 episodes.
How are those?
Okay, I like them. I have.
Oh my god, we are so over an hour.
We're at an hour and 35 minutes. So
whatever, it's all in vaginas.
Skip if you don't want to listen.
I really like them, especially for like. I feel like my, especially when I bought them. Like I don't know if they're a little different now. For like a super heavy day, would I be cool in them all day long? Probably not. But for at least at the beginning and the end, when it's not quite as heavy, fucking great. Really? Totally fine. And it's super weird because the way the fabric works, like the nothing comes out on the outside. So it's all just sort of held in the inside. And what I like about them is that they donate every purchase you pair. Every pair you purchase, they donate to like third world countries where girls can't go to school because they have their periods and then they end up dropping out because they can't pass their classes. Like, so Tom's, Thinks, all the brands that like when you purchase something, they donate to another like really good cause or whatever. I'm all about. They're like the Toms of vaginas. I drink a lot of those.
I don't want Tom anywhere near my vagina. Whoever Tom is.
I do. Tom is.
I know some pretty nasty Toms. You want me to throw them your way?
I don't know. I'm getting pretty desperate.
All right. So,
maybe. Good time to end it.
That's it. Stacy, how was literally 5 seconds each? How was your wine?
This Costco $10 wine, if you like a red blend, buy it.
Costco has a tendency to buy nicer wines and then relabel it with their cheap wine. So, you should definitely buy wine at Costco.
How's your wine?
My wine is great. I haven't had alcohol in like a week and a half because I've been sick and I didn't eat much today. And so I now.
Okay, Aaron.
This is delicious. It's no vodka, but it'll do.
You'll feel better in the morning.
I'm thoroughly impressed with the Virginia Dare wine. It was very, very good. I would definitely buy it again. And I will be bringing it to GCLS for Jean and I.
Holler at Jean. Shout out, Jean.
Hello, I'll be here. I'll be at GCLS too. What the fuck?
But you're not writing the book with us. We're going to let you drink it.
Bullshit. I would like a sip. Can I have a goddamn sip?
We'll talk. Maybe me, you, and Jean will write it. Maybe me, you, and Jean will write our next book together. All right. Until you guys got like 2 weeks worth of episodes in one, we talked about a lot of vaginas and abortion, which I think pairs perfectly together.
Hand in hand.
Lip and lip. Until next week, everybody. Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.